Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. The Boyle Heights community has been in the news for years and most recently for the push and pull between locals and various developers looking to make big changes within its borders. Boyle Heights is traditionally working class, immigrant neighborhood, and incredibly diverse throughout a long history. It's been referred to by some as LA's Ellis Island. A new documentary, East LA Interchange, shines a light on the way Boyle Heights' multicultural community is weathered through radically restrictive housing covenants, Japanese-American internment, federal redlining policies, lack of political representation, and building the largest and busiest freeway interchange system in the world. The movie highlights the current threat of gentrification faced by the neighborhood. My guests for today's show are Betsy Kalin, who is the director and producer of East LA Interchange. Welcome, Betsy.
Well, good to be here.
Ruby Gomez, who is the associate producer of East LA Interchange. And Ruby is joining us by phone from New York. Ruby, thank you for joining us.
And very happy to be here.
Oh, we're happy to have you too. And then Jeter, who refuses to allow me to use his first name, who is featured in East LA Interchange. And thank you for joining us, Jeter.
Thank you for having me.
So talk a little bit about, first, I mentioned the word gentrification, and not a term that maybe everybody understands. So do you want to kind of illuminate what that means?
Sure. Gentrification, in the way that I see it, is when developers and people from outside a community move into it and start displacing the residents who are already there.
And that's happened in a number of places throughout the nation.
Yes, and right now it's happening all over. And in fact, this film's been traveling all over the country at festivals. And every community that we go into, we're always talking about how it's like Boyle Heights and there's gentrification that's happening.
So talk a little bit about the film and kind of what attracted you to Boyle Heights in the first place.
Well, our executive producer, Eric Waterman's family, is from Boyle Heights, and so he was really interested in telling the story of the community. It was one of the, in fact, I think it was the largest Jewish community west of Chicago at the time, and it's always been really diverse. So I started doing research on the subject and thought it was a fascinating place. There was really a rich history there. And I was also attracted to the fact that it was an activist community. So throughout its history, the residents were really aware of how their neighborhood was being impacted by outside forces.
And Ruby, you got involved with this film how?
Well, you know, to me it was a complete blessing. So I was born and raised in Boyle Heights, and I actually grew up a block away from the Breed Street Shoal, which was the first shoal west of the Mississippi. And so I was always surrounded by this history of the neighborhood, from its architecture to some of its iconography. You just can't avoid not seeing the Star of David opposite a huge mural of the Virgin of Guadalupe. Those are all things that you walk by. And so several years ago, I just started looking into, you know, what's happening in the neighborhood. And lo and behold, I stumbled upon Betsy Kalin, and she's working on this project. And the first thing I said to her was, how can I help? This was really important. It was an important story to be told. It resonates with so many communities, from even here in New York, actually. And the first thing she says, well, this is what we need. And so immediately I signed on to assist. It was just that much of a passion project for me.
And Jeter, how did you get involved with the film?
Well, I think because of our newsletter, we have I'll have to regress for a second. In 2002, I decided, because nobody had done anything, that our 50th high school reunion for the class of 52 was coming up, and nobody had done anything. And I knew a guy who had some addresses, So I had 15 addresses of people that graduated in 1952. In 2.5 months, I was able to get 150 people to show up at a picnic. Actually, wow. It was the Jeter's family picnic, and I just had extra tables and extra food, and we set up a sound system and invited our high school football coach to show up to be the master ceremonies or whatever, and it was the beginning of something. We were so glad to come back together. Many of us hadn't seen each other since the night we graduated.
I'll be darned.
And since then, we've had an annual picnic. I believe it's been 15, and six. The next one's 16th.
Oh my goodness!
And you know, many of us have passed away in the interim, but we come together with love, and it's been a positive thing. That's where I met Betsy.
Now you were raised in the area.
Yes. Boyle Heights starts at the L.A. River. The east side of the L.A. River is the beginning of Boyle Heights. And when I was 8 years old, my mom and I went to a theater. My mother raised me. My dad and mom were divorced when I was 3.5 years old. And I talk about, I have to regress a second. Also, that my mother was semi-illiterate.
Uh-huh.
The number one problem with blacks from the South is education.
Yeah.
She could read a little bit, but she was only the second generation born out of slavery. I was the third, so that we were black people were kind of different back then. And especially if you lived in the South, you didn't get a proper education, although I went to Catholic school, and I did, so I could read. But anyway, I fell asleep in a movie. My mom, we came out, we looked at the P car, and she said, do we take the car going this way or that way to get back to 22nd Street? Well, I thought I knew what I was saying. We catch it over there. But when we went over the First Street Bridge, I knew there was no bridge going to 22nd Street. And so I ding-donged the streetcar to stop. And he ran through the stop and let us off at the next location or stop. And when we got off, there was one of the local winos, hey, you looking for a place to live, you know, and we were living with my grandparents at the time, and we said yes. So we went right down the street, and sure enough, our landlord for the next 12 years, Vasily Volkov, rented us a room. So I grew up in the Russian flat. That was the time that I could actually speak a little Russian.
Oh, my goodness.
At this particular time, Babunya and Jevishka is about all I could say, but I grew up in Lower Boyle Heights.
And Betsy, the interracial, just the complexity of that for this neighborhood, for this community is astounding. Right?
Yeah, it is one of the most diverse places in the United States. And it was diverse in a way that a lot of places aren't. I mean, it was, although there were like sections like the Russian Flats, it really was diverse where you had like African-Americans living next to Russians, living next to Japanese-Americans, living next to Mexican-Americans, living next to Jews.
Right. So didn't have the streets that were just the Italian section or the Russian section or the...
Right. It was pretty much mixed throughout the whole neighborhood. And then as Jeter was talking about Roosevelt High School, I mean, once you went to Roosevelt, it was like the only, you know, public high school in the area. Everybody went there. So it became a United Nations, you know. It was really about sharing your culture and your heritage, not so much about assimilation.
How long had you lived there, Ruby?
I was born there in 1976. And
okay.
I moved to New York for college and ended up staying. And it's one of those things where when you leave a place, your heart sort of stays where it is, and every time you go back, you're there with this incredible sense of pride and just community, and also this you know, your commitment to this place, because that sort of stays with you.
Now, living in New York, you're living in a very integrated community. How is it different from your experience of Boyle Heights?
Well, you know, what's one of the big misnomers, and I might get into a lot of trouble for this one, but I think New Yorkers are always like, oh, we're in such a diverse melting pot, we're this and this and this. But truth be told, I can't help but feel that a lot of New Yorkers feel good about themselves because they ride a train car with different types of people on a regular basis. But do they ever go visit those people in their own neighborhoods, in their respective neighborhoods? Do they go hang out in parts of Queens? Do they go? They don't. You know, we're just very happy to, okay, we're on the same train car. Look at how tolerant we are. That seems to suffice a quota, but it's not real. And it's very different. Again, it's a very coming from where I came from. It's just a complete misnomer to think that New York is this place of incredible diversity. It is a place of incredible diversity, but to say that people congregate in the same way, not so much. So it's interesting to see that. But I mean, in terms of parallels, Betsy was recently in New York, actually, to screen the film in New York, and it was incredible to sort of hear the voice of the Lower East Side and all these different individuals talking about. Essentially, the issues that Boyle Heights has faced are here, and it's interesting to see that happen in a place that's so big and has the same fears as this local little community in L.A.
Yeah, and the gentrification in New York, I mean, there are neighborhoods that have been wiped out completely.
Yes.
I mean, communities that are completely turned over. And so the film really is addressing something very special with this community in Boyle Heights. But there's a bigger message coming out of the film. And Betsy, do you want to talk a little bit about what the impact of this was for you? What are you looking to do with this film?
Yes, I mean, that our whole message was really, you know, let's explore Boyle Heights and let's look at the history from the 1940s to the present. But we're not going to just focus, you know, the lens on this community. We're going to use it as a way of looking at the history of the United States and also the current situation in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, this neighborhood is a microcosm of all these other communities throughout the country that are fighting. You know, they're fighting for their survival and they're fighting to be safe, healthy places to live, places that are affordable to live. You know, there's a lot of immigration going on around the country, and so it's a place that really recognizes immigrant rights and what to do about that. So what we're hoping happens with the film is that it's going to go into schools, universities. It's appropriate for grades, you know, 6 through 12, and also for community organizing. So we really want it to be able to go into all of these places as well as, you know, be entertainment for other people. But we want it to be able to create change.
How did you pick your subjects to feature in the film?
Well, it was a long process. It was about a year of talking to different people and doing research. And unfortunately, you know, the film is only an hour long, and it could have been, you know, six times as long as that. There are people that are wonderful, and they just didn't make the final version. But it was mostly people who were really passionate about the area and had a unique version of their story. You know, like when you talk to Jeter, you can hear how unique his voice is. And he still, I mean, he does so much with organizing the alumni reunions. And he didn't even talk. I mean, he's famous in Boyle Heights, and he didn't even talk about that.
Oh, we'll make him talk about that.
So it's like you want to have people on screen that other people can relate to no matter where they are.
And when you talk about the activism that, let me take a break and we'll come right back, because I want you to think about how the activism is different in this community. We are in our spring pledge drive, and your call right now can help us providing programs just like this one. The folks in Pledge Drive Central will explain some of the best reasons to call. The number is 549-8855, or you can make a pledge online at kcbx.org. It's as easy as that. We are talking today. I'm talking today with my guests, Betsy Kalin, who's the director and producer of a film, a documentary film that was featured at the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival, East LA Interchange, with us by phone from New York is the associate producer of the film, and that is Ruby Gomez. And then Jeter, who is one of the people who was featured in the film, East LA Interchange, is also here in the studio with us. So when we're talking about the difference in this community and activism, did you see a difference in when you were comparing it to other communities that have similar issues?
Yes. I mean, that's the thing that drew me to the neighborhood the most. I loved how there was this history of activism that goes back in time from the 1940s. Because of how the neighborhood was formed, it was a lot of discriminatory housing laws that made Boyle Heights one of the few places in Los Angeles where anyone could live. So
regardless of
race,
color,
yeah.
Religion. Okay.
And so what that did was it brought a lot of people with political backgrounds together. And so you had socialists, you had Trotskyists, you had Mexican anarchists. I mean, you had everybody living in that neighborhood, which really gave them an awareness of politics and class perspective, as well as bonding. You know, in like places where you don't really know your neighbor. People really got out and talked to their neighbors, and not only did they talk to them, they argued with them.
Uh-huh.
You know, they argued about issues, and that's going on today. So that's something that I really thought was unique about this place, and I thought that was a good lesson for other places in the country, was to be active in your community, get out there, make your voice heard, talk to your neighbors, you know, be aware of what's going on and fight to keep the neighborhood the way that you want it.
Do you think that there were key individuals in the beginning that kind of set the tone for that happening? Did you see any of that maybe made a difference? Because I can imagine that there are other communities where people can come together and they don't form that kind of willingness to argue with somebody else's perspective and leave it at, you've got your opinion, I've got mine.
You know, I don't think it was... I don't think it was individuals so much as it was really the way of life there, was discussion, was this diversity, was acceptance of other people. It was people from Boyle Heights, when they leave Boyle Heights and go to other places, don't realize how unique their upbringing was until they're around other people and they see so much racism and so much hostility.
Yeah.
And I think that it was just something that was fostered in this place. And it was just a wonderful thing, you know, to live there. And you can talk about that, what it was like.
Jeter, what was it like for you as a kid growing up in Boyle Heights?
Okay, I moved to the Russian Flats at age 9 in 1943. And it was my mom and I were living together, and Right away, the neighborhood kids took to me, and I was a pretty good little athlete then, and we played together every single day. And I remember the first week that we were there, one of the parents came over and spoke to my mom and said, would it be okay if I was Floyd then, would it be okay if Floyd went to the movie with us on Friday? She had two sons, Dan and Dickie. And my mom looked at me, you want to go? And I said, sure. So for the next 3 years, every Friday, I went to a movie with Mr. Garcia and his two sons. The Mayan Theater was a Mexican theater. It was no English.
Did you learn to speak Spanish?
I learned a lot. I'd hit Dickie and I said, Dickie, what does that mean? He says, I understand, but I can't tell you. So anyway, that was just the way it is, you know. And you would walk down the street, and maybe some Russian lady would see you. Floyd, come here. Come in. She'd give you, you know, a Russian dish of something. And it was just a wonderful community. And, you know, the alcoholism was really heavy in the lower flats. Every corner, you had a bunch of two or three winos that would hang out there, and I would go by and get a lecture every time. They'd call me to the side. And they'd say, hey, you do what your mother said, I'm going to kick your butt. You understand? You do what your mother said.
So they were part of that community,
they were part
too.
Of the community. It was somebody's father, somebody's uncle, you know, and it was just wonderful.
What did you and your mom talk about how that must have been almost like entering into a different world for her? I mean, you said you came from the South.
No, we didn't.
You didn't really talk
understand.
About that.
I mean, we didn't see it that way. It was we expected people to treat us like we treated them, and that's the way it was. So.
And it worked well. Now you also you worked in Boyle Heights.
Well, yes. Starting at age 18, I started working 20 hours a week at for the East District Recreation and Parks, and I did that for 10 years. And during that time, I also became a probation officer, so I worked 60 hours a week for at least 6 years, and I'm working in East L.A. I was working in an institution, Los Angeles Juvenile Hall, and later on I became a juvenile probation officer in the field and actually was covering East L.A. and Boyle Heights and, of course, Long Beach, and it kind of took you all over the county. But
you must have seen the difference between the way the kids were in your neighborhood and maybe some of the kids that you were working with that were from other neighborhoods.
I'm not sure.
In terms of the support?
I'm not really sure I can answer that correctly. I didn't. All I knew is that I had a way with all kids. You know, I had all different nationalities, and the fact that I grew up in Boyle Heights, where I absolutely could not see the difference between Japanese and Russians and Jews, and I mean, we were all the same, and that really worked well when I'm working with kids.
And they responded well to it.
They did. They go, wow. I don't know, and it was a natural. The playground really helped me to understand young people, and I was very successful, extremely successful.
How about for you, Ruby? You grew up in Boyle Heights as well,
right? So I grew up in what I'd like to call a beautiful little bubble of humanity. You know, Boyle Heights is not—it's not without its problems. There are things for sure that could be better, that could be improved. There's a lot, but in terms of my situation, you know, it was this little place where you didn't question identity. You were who you were. I went to school and it was across the street from me, and it was one of those things where there's lots of schools where you have to celebrate different things. And I remember, you know, when it came to the Cherry Blossom Festival, there we were creating cherry blossoms and honoring Japanese culture. When it came to Chinese New Year, we were all working on making a dragon and making sure we were ready to do our dragon parade. And there were these things that you did to honor your classmates, and that was what I grew up with, right? You know, in turn, they had to learn a bunch of dances for Cinco de Mayo. So all these things kind of went around in terms of our celebrating the various cultures and you know, what we did and what the neighborhood was comprised of. Over the course of time, it does become more Mexican. And in that time, it's interesting because suddenly you can be in this neighborhood and never have to speak a word of English. Everybody speaks Spanish. Everybody's just like, you know, you from the moment you walk down a little storefront, it's like Buenos Dias, and it's how are they, what would you like? What would you? It's interesting, and that's one of those things where when you live surrounded by a community that just knows you or knows your story, there's comfort, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe to a certain extent, there's complacency, but it is what it is in terms of creating the sense of. Well, this is my home. And you have to imagine that it's an adopted home, right? Because people are coming from different places.
All over.
In some cases, from all over. Mm-hmm. And you're suddenly making this place your home, and you're getting along. And in some cases, it's a struggle, right? Because it's a question of finances, it's a question of a lot of things. But everyone's there to make ends meet, you know. For a bit recently, my mother was telling me about her neighbor and how he was a cotton candy vendor, and he made cotton candy and then took his cotton candy all the way to the beach, and every day he was just there making his cotton candy. And this is his survival story, you know. And I wonder how many people at the beach can think about it, like, wow, this man has made the trek from Boyle Heights to sell his cotton candy.
Yeah. When you talk about the activism that has been a part of this community, do either of you recall in growing up being a part of that activism, and in what ways?
Go ahead, Jeter.
No, I really didn't have a comment, so go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I was on the younger side, but my brother was involved with the Mothers of East LA. And if you can imagine these women, elderly women, mothers, banding together to oppose something. And we're talking women who might be in their 50s and their 60s. They have older children, and they're maybe they speak English, maybe they don't. Maybe they have an education. Perhaps not. College educated? Probably, definitely not. And they banded together to fight and oppose the building of another prison system or a juvenile hall. And actually, Betsy can speak more to that.
But
that's an incredible example of women who probably back in their, you know, maybe didn't have a sense of purpose or anything, but they're like, well, this is important and we have to oppose this. Mm-hmm. And it can't happen to our neighborhood. Our neighborhood's been compromised one too many times. So what can we do?
Yeah, and Betsy, do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because as you said, this isn't a community that hasn't had violence or hasn't had issues that other communities also deal with.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of issues, especially, you know, there's the issue of gangs. That was the stereotype that affected Boyle Heights for many years. The media was always talking about, you know, that there were shootings and gang violence, especially during the 80s and 90s. So there were these issues. However, the community to this day is still fighting for different things. There are so many nonprofit organizations that are in the neighborhood looking to help, you know, with kids, with education, with environmental justice. And also the community stays really hyper-vigilant about gentrification and, you know, development and people wanting to come in and sell the community, you know, to people who are outsiders who might not have the best interests of the people who live there now in mind. So it's just a really amazing place.
When you were doing the film, was there something that surprised you? I mean, obviously you'd done a lot of research before you went out and did this project. Was there something that kind of you went, wow, didn't?
Well, I think what did surprise me was that, you know, here we have this neighborhood that in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and then into the 60s is one of the most diverse communities in the United States. In the 60s, it starts to change and become predominantly Mexican-American. So during that time, it did not become less activist. You know, the activism stayed strong. The Chicano movement, this is one of the centers of the Chicano movement in the U.S. So it's just, that's what surprised me, is that no matter, you know, the different makeup of the people who are there, they stayed committed to fighting for their beliefs over a tremendous amount of time.
Yeah, Jeter.
I could think of something now. In 1969, I remember there was a teacher over at Lincoln High School who got the student body to march to bring about change, that because their books were old, ragged. There was so many things about their school that when they compared it to Beverly Hills High School, I mean, it was no comparison.
Yeah.
And the Black Panthers was such a active group at that particular time.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, the Latinos came up with the Brown Berets.
I remember.
Mm-hmm. And they were saying, I mean, I remember going to one of the marches, and when the guy got the microphone, he said, "We are not white. We are Latinos. We need the same thing that the blacks have, or Negroes, or whatever we were at that particular time. At that time, there was a lot of federal funds that were going into the black community because of the black community coming together and complaining about...
Because they were vocal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as a result, they did quite a few things in East L.A., like they put a swimming pool in at Roosevelt High School, and things improved.
Yeah, because they shared their voice.
Yeah.
Our pledge, our spring pledge drive is in full swing, and if you want to join us so we can keep this exceptional programming available to you, you can do that by calling us at 549-8855 to make a pledge, or give us a look online at kcbx.org. Again, call us at 549-8855. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station. Our spring pledge drive, again, is in full swing. Please give us a call, 549-8855. East LA Interchange is a documentary talking about community in the U.S. that shines a light on Boyle Heights and how the community has weathered many changes over the years, now facing yet another one, gentrification. Today's show has been pre-recorded, and the voices you hear with me are Betsy Kalin, who's the director and producer of East LA Interchange, Ruby Gomez, the associate producer of East LA Interchange, and is joining us by phone from New York, and Jeter, who's one of the individuals that's featured in the East LA Interchange documentary film. And welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ruby.
I think she
Ruby?
Said, thank you.
Oh, she said thank you. Okay. I thought you were asking me a question or making a comment like you were going to come in. So when
the inflection of my thank you might have, you know, veered you off.
Not to worry. So with the changes in the gentrification that's happening with this community, is it driving people out?
Not so much yet.
Okay,
I mean,
that's the fear. That's what's changing.
Yeah, I mean, there's art galleries that are opening in the neighborhood. There's still a fight. There's a community called Wyvernwood, and it's a historic garden apartment community. And there's a developer who wants to tear it down and build it up and only have 15% low-income housing, which is, it's now 100% low-income housing.
So essentially to move out the low-income housing.
Yes, completely. And so the neighborhood is really fighting for that and has been fighting for that for years. So there's things in process, but it's right now what's happening is that that Latinos from the community are coming back. So maybe people who left are coming back in and investing in the community. And so the question becomes, is that gentrification? What is that exactly? If you have people, you know, like let's say Ruby moved back and opened a store, right, Ruby?
Right.
That she was thinking about doing. So if she ever opened a shop, you know,
Will it be happily accepted? I hope so.
Well, what do you think? Would it be happily accepted, or is it seen as an outsider coming in and taking away?
Well, there might be an issue of credibility. Am I a lifelong Boyle Heightser? I think people would observe me and say, like, that no longer applies since I've been in New York. Am I raised with a commitment to the neighborhood? I am, you know. Is appeasing the neighborhood one of the things that would be a huge concern to me? Oh, for sure. But would I want to be a part of our local neighborhood's commerce? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And not in an advantageous way, but in a way that builds up the neighborhood. And when I say build up, it's about, you know, giving something back. It's about, you know, and I hope it's not on the basis of like, oh, changing the fabric of the neighborhood by zero means of that. But it's about, you know, there's something right now that's where handcrafted, artisanal things are highly valued and esteemed. And that's something that I would want to bring back to the community. And I feel it would be so relevant But yeah, lots of things are changing. And what's kind of beautiful about it is that it's happening with folks from the area that are they're becoming entrepreneurs. You know, they're starting their Boyle Heights area brand. They're starting, you know, we have a small space called Espacio, and it's doing well in terms of their curating, their programming, and their fashionable Boyle Heights apparel. It's great. And so there's a lot.
Can those things coexist? I mean, is there a way to find the balance so that you can bring in those new resources, that new revenue, and yet still preserve the integrity of the relationship in the community?
Yeah, I definitely think it can coexist. I think the issue becomes now about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to lose more housing to people who are moving into the neighborhood.
You know, I was looking, and according to CoreLogic, which is a real estate data and analytics company, in the first 11 months of 2015, the median sale price for homes in that zip code, which accounts for most of the Boyle Heights, was $290,000, which was up 11.5% over the same period the year before. So that's a significant jump. I mean, even when you look at it compared to other places in California that haven't had nearly that kind of a jump, it would be frightening.
Yeah, it's very scary. It's very scary. I mean, there's great community organizations that are working on issues like that. There's the East LA Community Corp, and there's Union de Vecinos that is working for tenants' rights. So there's people that are, you know, watching this very closely to see what's happening. But again, there's going to be the Sears building. It's this famous landmark in Los Angeles, and that's going to be developed soon. So it's kind of, you know.
And when we're talking about just in terms of the gentrification in a community, the fear is that as people come back in, purchase, and rebuild, it elevates the cost. And what it says is, you know, now we want our area to look like this, and the existing community no longer looks like that.
And I think it's not always people coming back in. It's just people coming in.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the money comes
in.
No,
not back in.
Yeah. Like the money comes in, and it's the fear is that it's just going to push everybody out. I mean, Boyle Heights is predominantly a renter's community, too.
So most of the places are rentals.
So most of the places and most of the people living there are renters. So they're really vulnerable.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be some kind of civic responsibility, and at least even by lawmakers, to protect our residents, especially, you know, those, we're not talking about a high income community, but quite the opposite. Why would you take families that are in a place they can afford, like Wyvernwood, and then decide, okay, well, let's see how we can change that or develop it or turn into what, so we can have a small percentage of lower income homes there? I mean, that's just, it's rather inhumane if you think about it.
Well, and why do you think it's happening?
Well, it's all money. I mean, everything in
cheap.
Los Angeles is
right.
Developers,
it's so expensive,
looking to make money. Yeah.
Well, there's always the outsider who thinks they know better, like, oh, this could be better if, right? Or this has so much potential, or they see progress in a way that makes no sense to the local communities that live there, that are actually there on a day-to-day basis. And what does that mean, really, relocating an entire community? Where do you take them? Where do they go? You're essentially saying, you know, we can have a different person that we prefer here than you. And, I mean, that's a bias, that's discrimination, that's a whole lot of negativity it pains to even talk about it, because it's such a heavy, loaded conversation of who should stay, who should go.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in places nearby. I mean, you see it in Highland Park, you see it in Echo Park. I mean, you're seeing these massive changes in communities.
When you were making the film, what was your overall goal for the film? What did you want to accomplish with it?
Well, I wanted to change the world.
Wow. So, what a simple little goal.
No, I mean, I really wanted to explore what it meant to have a very aware and diverse community that was fighting to continue as it wants, you know? Like, I wanted to see this story told. It's not told. You know, we don't get to see movies No. about, you know, low-income, working-class communities of color.
That work together.
That work together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and work together against big things. I mean, in the movie, we talk about how the U.S. government actively discriminated against the people living in Boyle Heights with mortgage loans, you know, called redlining. Mm-hmm. And so they, because it was a multicultural area, they were designated as the highest risk. And so if you wanted to buy a home in Boyle Heights, it was going to be substantially more expensive than if you bought a home in the Valley.
Well, you know, what do you want the viewer to take away from this? What do you want to motivate them to do?
Well, I want them to become active in their own communities. You know, I want them to look at this film and say, you know what? I don't know what's going on in my area. I don't know what's going on in neighboring communities.
I don't know who my next door neighbor is.
Exactly. I don't know who my neighbor is. Yeah. So I want the people to get involved and know what's going on and know that there are places like this that are really important for us to have. It's a story of America. Yeah. And I think it's important for us to understand it.
Well, I think when we're talking about just the story that you were sharing, Jeter, about the, you know, the Black Panthers, about, you know, Chicanos getting involved in standing up for their rights and some kind of equality, it's really about people having a voice.
Right.
This is not a silent community, in other words. What I'm hearing is this is a community that is loud, proud, and going to take care of what needs to be taken care of themselves.
Yes. I mean, it's an uphill battle always when you're fighting the powers that be.
Yeah.
But I think that just having that voice and feeling empowered to speak your truth is an amazing lesson. And that's what I hope the film
What does. Are they doing about this new issue that is there now? I mean, what is the community doing to try and combat this?
Oh, they're very active. I mean, they're active in meetings, they're active online. Just a brief story, like one of these real estate people was going to give a bike tour of Boyle Heights and try and sell it to people from outside the community and just, hey, let's ride around on a bike and I'll show you. You can buy this up and buy this up and buy that up. Well, within, I think it was like a matter of days, the realtor apologized publicly, canceled the bike tour, and said that that would never happen again. And that was because of public outcry from Boyle Heights.
And what did they do to make that happen?
They
didn't
just got
do it
online.
With violence.
No, they just did it online. They said, this is not right. You know, you're encouraging gentrification. This is our community. How dare you do this? This is not respectful of the people that live there now.
Ruby, what would you like people to take away from this film?
You know, one of the things, and this is what we're repeatedly asked, is how does this resonate with other communities? How does this relate to other places? And the truth is that it relates to so many urban environments right now. You know, Boyle Heights suffered its fair share of environmental discrimination, and, you know, Flint, Michigan has water contamination.
Yes.
So Flint, Michigan has water contamination. You know, St. Paul, Minnesota, a very thriving African-American community, was bulldozed by the I-94. These are underserved communities with strong representation of strong communities of color, people who repeatedly, for whatever reason, are displaced. They're displaced by lawmakers. They're displaced because perhaps they're seen, oh, well, we can just relocate them and uproot them. And subsequently, these are underserved communities that have this uphill battle. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, as Betsy said, it's about invoking change and banding together to be an activist. You know, with Flint, Michigan's water system, I mean, that's just a shame. That should be illegal. How this got through so many lawmakers and went unchecked is abominable, right?
Yeah.
But these are, again, we're talking, these Boyle Heights communities are all over this country, and it's about, you know, what can we do? How do you get local communities to be heard and have a voice? And so it's about finding that voice and be loud about it. You know, it's about finding out who your neighbors are, banding together, and opposing all this discrimination that's occurring. And you'll find that we have more in common than not with a lot of these neighborhoods across the country. So it's about that. Our little story goes beyond a small little neighborhood east of downtown and west of East L.A. proper. It's a story about what's happening in America.
And I want to thank all of you today for bringing this little story of East L.A. Interchange to us here. I want to thank Betsy Kalin, Jeter, and Ruby Gomez. And I want to thank everybody from the film for East L.A. Interchange. Center Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. And I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices. It's now time to join KCBX as a subscriber and help us provide shows you love. Contribute to Spring Pledge Drive at 549-8855 or online at kcbx.org.